So, yeah, Mark and Carrie are involved in a ministry in Cambodia, quite a wonderful, wonderful outreach. They'll explain more of that. Some of you aren't that familiar with it, so they'll be giving us a little bit and then update us with some live show here. So Mark and Carrie, why don't you come on up? Mark is plugged in for sound, and Carrie gets this mic.
If it was one of those big ones, I would have been on the ground. Well, thanks for giving up your Sunday school time. We're excited to be here in Tequilma with you guys and share the good things that God's been doing. Kind of give you an overview of the morning. We're going to talk about, show some pictures of the ministry and what we've been doing. And then later on in the service, I'll give you a little bit more of a personal journey of living in Cambodia. So apparently, good deal. All right. So this is my wife, Carrie, and we have been married for 32 years now. I got that right, right? Yeah, 32 years, and got a couple of kids, and our kids had originally gone with us to Germany and to Japan in our previous ministry. And so this church has supported us for 21 years. And thank you. Thank you for being an incredibly significant part of our ministry and praying for us. We are truly blessed by this family. So we hope today is an encouragement to you, a challenge, continues to paint a picture of what actually is going on in Cambodia.
So our main work in Cambodia is with child trafficking. And as we are having everybody in the service, I'll make it a little bit more broad in the explanations. And so we work with child trafficking. And if you are at all familiar with the issue worldwide, there's three different categories. There's aftercare, that's people who have already been trafficked and have had trauma. They are come out of those situations and they're rehabilitated and usually given another kind of work to do. And that's called aftercare. And then there's intervention, which is more the criminal part, where there's prosecution, there's raids and stings, and it has more to do with the legal system and the police work that is involved in the trafficking issue. And that's intervention. And then there's prevention, which is exactly what it says. It's preventing those things from happening. With Remember New, Mark and I work exclusively with prevention. And we work with organizations who do the other two, that do aftercare and intervention, but we are exclusively on the side of prevention. So that's it's helpful to know that, because the vast majority of organizations work in the aftercare sector. And so just so that you know that we're in the prevention side. That's just the place that God has called us to. All the work is important and all dear to His heart, but this is the place that we would love to. We have a heart for keeping that from happening, rather than treating it after it has already happened.
First year.
So we've been in Cambodia 3.5 years, and the first year. Our previous ministry, we were with military, and so our work was a little bit was with Americans. So this was incredibly different. And it's, you know, when you're trying to explain how difficult something is, sometimes you just, words fail you. Well, that's exactly what it has been for us. Words just fail, and how difficult the transition was. The ministry was in a really difficult place as well. There was threats of being shut down. There was lots of problems going on. So in the middle of that, the Lord sustained us. He kept us from packing our bags. We tried many times.
Every day.
But by His grace and for His glory, we are still there, and I'm thankful that we did stay. So we want to just share with you a few of the people, some of the ways that God has worked. The young woman in the middle is Laic, And she is our manager, but she started out as a personal assistant to me. It's kind of the reason we put her picture in is because when we first got there, we just didn't know anything. And about a year into it, God brought her to us, and God has used the believers in that country to bless us significantly, to help us get the work done. And so in order for you not to think that we were the ones that did all of it, which would be entirely not accurate, we want to show you some of the people that God used to actually do most of the work. Leg was the one that got us in compliance with the government, which is an enormous deal when you live in another country. So in a country where a lot of the stuff isn't, like here, you can go online and read and learn and that's kind of thing, and that's not available there. And the internet is available, just the information is not available and it's not accurate. So she was the one that went through all that work and brought us into compliance with the government, which so is huge. She's been a huge blessing. So we provide residential care for children who are in high risk of being hurt and trafficked, and so vulnerable kids. So it is a 24/7 care facility. So the kids come and live with us. They go to school. We do supplemental school, all that. So our house parents are truly the most important piece of the entire ministry. So we just, and in Cambodia, it's not, in the culture itself, it is not common for people to care for other people's children. Even stepchildren, most of the time, are not cared for. And so, in this culture, one of the biggest obstacles that we've had is finding people willing to care for other people's children. We only hire Christians, but we can wait. We've waited a year and a half, even the last one with an empty house, a house all built, waiting for the Lord to provide house parents for us. So they're a really significant part. And to us, they shine like stars in a middle of a dark culture. They really are beautiful, beautiful examples of the Lord's love and care for the kids. So this is one of our house parents. Go ahead. The next picture is a widow who came to us. We had only accepted girls, and then we had a home, and the government asked us to accept sibling sets so that siblings can be raised together. So we have a boys' home and a girls' home, but we didn't have anybody to care for our boys, so we weren't accepting any boys. From the children come to us through the government and through other organizations that work in other parts of the community. They recommend, they find out when kids are in difficult situations and recommend them to us. And so this woman, we accepted a sibling set that had two boys with nobody to care for them. And the day that the boys arrived on the property, she arrived on the property, and we didn't know her before. And just the way that God worked, that God had been putting it on her heart for about 6 months, that he wanted her to do a certain work, and she didn't know about it until she came to us. And so it's really, you can see the Lord's hand in it. Just the day before, we waited a year and a half between the widow coming and this couple. The day before I left from, a few days before I left Cambodia, this couple came to us as well. And so they're in training right now, and we're really hopeful that it will be something that they will be able to do and want to do. This young woman came about a year ago. She teaches English to our kids in Cambodia. The kids have, one of the things that we found out while we were there is huge gaps in their learning. If they come from really vulnerable situations, usually that means they aren't attending school. School is free, except for the bribes that you have to give the teachers in order to teach the kids. And we say that, but the reality is the government provides no paper, there's absolutely nothing in the school, so the teachers have to do a lot of that from their own funds. So it's just a real difficult situation. So we've had 10, 11, 12-year-olds who are in the first grade. And so you can see that the gaps in their education are very significant to their vulnerability. So we provide supplemental school, just started about a year ago, and we hire a local to help them learn their own language, which is a really challenging language to learn. And then we do English and computers, and this young woman is our English teacher. And so we're really grateful for her. God brought her about a year ago.
for those who speak English or do computers. There's a 0% unemployment rate in Cambodia. They can get a job anywhere. And so it's a very necessary skill for our kids to learn English, and we put a lot of emphasis on that. And the kids are growing in their English tremendously.
Even if they aren't able to graduate from high school, if they get too old or they're not able to complete it for reasons of capacity, they can still get a job if they know English and computers. So this was, like I alluded to earlier, we were, when we first got there, we were threatened with a shutdown. They gave us 3 months to begin to get things in order. And this was just in April. Thankfully, they didn't stick to the 3 months. They gave us 2 years because they saw that we were making efforts. And so in April, they gave us a license, which means that we are complete compliance with the government, and there's not any threat of being shut down. That was a huge gift.
The gal on the right in the red is our computer teacher and also does helps out with a lot of our administration.
There's some pictures of our computer training. Very small. You know, it's small. It's not this big, elaborate, huge organization. It's just small. It's just ordinary people doing ordinary things for the Lord in another country. The kids attend a local church, and this is their pastor. And then once a week, he comes and does discipleship in the home with the house parents and the kids and those kinds of things. That discipleship class led to 8 of our kids being baptized and 2 of our house parents actually being baptized too. And so they got a bus and drove 5 hours to the ocean so that they could be baptized in a very public setting. And so on their shirts, you can see that it says, you can't see it says, I have decided to follow Jesus. Very public. In Buddhism, it's okay to be Christian and Buddhist, but there's something about the baptism that really draws the line where you're really making a strong commitment to following Christ. So this is one of our sibling sets. I wanted to tell you a couple stories. A lot of times people ask me, what is it in the life of a child that would put them in so much danger that they would have to come and live with us? I wanted to tell you a couple stories of our kids. One particular young woman, when she was 13, her mom pulled her out of school. She was at that time in the 5th grade. Her mom pulled her out of school and had her go to work. And so she worked from when she was 13 to 16 and sent the money home, just earned just the smallest amount of money, significantly less than even the going wage, and sent the money home for her family to live. And by that, she was in the city, and she sent it home out into the country. When she was 16 years old, her mom was foraging in a pond for food, and her mom drowned in that pond. Most Cambodians don't know how to swim, and so any kind of water thing is very dangerous for them, and she drowned. And so at 16, now this young woman has no education, and she's the head of her household. The fathers had abandoned the family long before. And so they sent her to live with a relative, an auntie, whose husband was drunk all the time. And in Cambodia, there's only one, the whole family only ever sleeps in one room. And so because of the danger of that situation, the government actually asked us to take care of her. And she now is so excited. Like, there's just such a change in her. When she first arrived, she said, "No way, I'm not staying." And within a week, she was like, "No way, I'm not leaving." And so several of her family, other family members, wanted her because she was willing to work for them. And so there's a lot of sometimes us seeking to protect them so that they can get educated instead of being taken out so early and being put in such a difficult situation where they don't have a way of providing for themselves. So she's now, in 1 year, she went through 3 grades. She was so enthusiastic about getting through. So she's now 17 and in 7th grade, and but focused on getting through to university. Thankfully, Cambodia, you can go to high school until you're 25. Most of our children won't graduate until they're in their early 20s because of the gaps in their education. So anyway, so it's just fun to see her have hope again. you know, just have excitement that she can do something with her life, whereas before she thought that nothing, she would never be able to do anything. One of our other young women, she lived with her grandma on the streets of Phnom Penh. Her grandma used her handicapped sister to beg on the streets of Phnom Penh. And an organization found her and brought her to us. And she has really begun to develop and blossom as a young woman. And she has... When a couple years ago, when Mark was, when we were seeing that our house parents were spending a lot of time, it's not safe for our kids to walk back and forth to school. It's just not a safe environment for them. And so Mark, we transport them. So Mark asked the girls, hey, would any of you be willing to drive a tuk-tuk? And we'll show you a picture of it a little bit later. She was the only one that said yes. And the reason is because driving a tuk-tuk in Cambodia is a man's job, and there's very clear boys' work, girls' work. And so she was the only one that said yes. And at first she got made fun of, but it wasn't very long before the women in the village were, you know, giving her the thumbs up as she was driving by. And since then, she's now trained 5 of our other girls, so she completely broke the mold and also trains our house parents to drive. And we can transport about 10 to 15 kids in the tuk-tuks. She took a leadership class, and from that really excelled. And just a couple months ago, the local government officials were putting together a meeting for the governor, and they called and asked for her by name to come and MC the meeting. So she really has grown, and we just love to see them realize that they have potential and that they can do things that they never thought they could before. Just some of our older girls that all graduated from the leadership class. So we have three different areas. One of the areas where there's a lot of danger is in the Vietnamese immigrant population. There's about 2 million Vietnamese that live in Cambodia. Many of them are not allowed to live on land for lack of papers, and so they live on the river, and so they build homes that float on the river. And they only fish for their living, and so it's incredibly poor situation. Also, because they're fishing, their children often don't go to school. So that's it's just the perfect setup for danger for the kids. There's a pastor and his wife that minister to this population, and we built a loft in their church, and we take care of, house about 12 girls there. So that's another area separate. We have a piece of property about 7 acres, and then this area is about 3 hours north where we also take care of kids. There's some pictures of the housing. It's a very difficult setup. They're kind of trapped in these areas. So
we got there 3.5 years ago, and this is kind of what the property looked like. We have a 7-acre parcel that we're building homes on, and three things that we're trying, our objectives by having this piece of property is that we want it to be a place of beauty. We want it to be a place that reflects the Lord's beauty. And you can see this is a really beautiful place, isn't it? No, just kidding. It really wasn't. It was gross. It was ugly. And everything was brown. There was garbage everywhere. And so it was an ugly place. And so the second thing is we want to be a safe place. When we got there, there was 3 strands of barbed wire that was circling the property, and we had people walking across our property to just step right through the fence and then just keep on going, and things would disappear. But it was also just very unsafe for our girls. And so since that time, we've been able to put a fence up, and a proper fence, one that keeps much more of the visitors out, and we've been able to hold on to a few more of our animals. And then the third thing is that we're trying to make this a sustainable project too, and so we've taken a number of steps to implement agricultural things dealing with gardening and also with animals, and we'll talk a little bit more about that effort. So this is a before picture. And so I want to show you an after picture. And I want you to keep your eye on this building right behind the van there. That building was just going up. So this is the after picture now. And so everything you see there was not there about 2.5 years ago. So God's been doing an amazing thing. We've had a number of teams coming over, and we're making it a beautiful place. And then as we engage with our Kamai staff in trying to help them to know how to make something beautiful, there's no trash on our property. I often jest that the national flower in Cambodia is a plastic bag because you see them everywhere. There's garbage everywhere. They just don't take care of their place. And so this property here, we've planted trees. We've probably planted about 60 trees now on the property. We've been putting some buildings up. This is the tuk-tuk that Nuna drives. We'll put 10 to 15 kids in the back of that, and now our girls are transporting. So we've gotten a playground in there for the kids, soccer fields and volleyball. So one of these days, Takilma is going to come visit us in Cambodia. And this is the house that you would stay in. This is our team house. We've got 12 beds there. The Lord blessed us with that a couple years back so that we could host teams instead of having to, when they would come and visit, we would have to drive 45 minutes to the local guest house. And it's very dangerous to drive at night in Cambodia. There's a lot of collisions that happen. People drive without lights and stuff like that. And so the Lord blessed us with this team home. It does have air conditioning. And so when at night you're able to sleep because it is a very warm, warm country, very humid. And it's got a Western kitchen, and we feed you really good food and food that will keep you well, not sick, much like a lot of the food that you would get. And off to the right there is a fish farm. And we've since planted about 2,000 tilapia in that fish farm and another 1,000 in our duck pond. And so when you can come over, you can go fishing with the children. So
drew 4 people.
So this property here was it was made up of 15 rice paddies. And so if you know anything about rice farming, they build these berms all over the place to keep and hold the water in. Well, in a rainy country, that's not exactly really good when you're trying to plant gardens in there because they just don't grow as well. And so we've gotten a tractor in there and have completely shaped the land so that we can get all the water going in the right direction. So about 80% of the runoff water will actually go into our duck pond now. And so we try to capture everything that we can on the property and put it right back into our groundwater. We do get a lot of rain. And so and the other thing is that we've had a barn since then. This is our version of a barn. And so we don't put any walls in there because it's just too flipping hot. And we have composting going on under there. We've got worm composting. We have cows in there, so we capture all their waste and use that waste for composting in other places. We take coconut shells and sugarcane bagasse, grind it all up for composting, get some organic material. We have to replenish the soils because the soils have been so damaged from over farming for so many years. And so this is all stuff that when I got there, I didn't know hardly anything about this stuff because I was a youth pastor for 28 years, you know. I learned how to grow kids, okay, not farming, not any of that stuff. And God has just gives me a passion about it. I love talking about it, and I love doing it, and I love implementing it. And so the Lord has really blessed us that way. This part right here in front of the building, this is one of our garden areas. We just harvested about 400 pounds of corn in this little lower section right there. We grow in watermelon, all kinds of vegetables. 80% of the vegetable need is taken care of by growing it on our property. And so it's growing, and God's doing a good thing, and so we're really excited about that. This framed building up here is a shop.
We're going to put a roof on it. The roof is already actually on it, but it's a place where we hope that someday we're able to bring a retired man or a couple over to be able to teach our boys how to build things out of wood or take engines apart or weld. All of those things just to help in their development as young men. And and that's a place where we're going to be able to do keep some of our storage and keep it off of the ground so that the critters that are there don't have any place to hide. So this is our other garden, and this is a raised bed area because it was kind of in a low spot, and so we had a retired couple, a guy from a military base in Okinawa, said he wanted to come over and help us with our gardens. So in between his retirement from the military and his it's a civilian job, he spent 9 months with his wife, and they came over there, and he hand leveled every one of those bricks. And he was an aircraft mechanic, so he was just very fastidious that way, you know. And so it's absolutely beautiful. And so they're pulling out a couple hundred, 200 to 300 pounds of vegetables every month. And they grow all kinds of different stuff. We got a few pictures of some of the things that we grow. We're picking fruits off the trees. We do try to get the kids involved in this. Our older girls are a little bit more busy. That's a papaya. Yeah, you'd be thinking that's like a squash or something, but that's a piece of fruit that was hanging off the trees. Don't want to stand under that one. So we do get our children involved in helping with the animals. So they when we harvest fish out of our tilapia farm, they're cleaning fish. They're going to make great wives someday, right? You know, and they clean all the ducks and the chickens. And you guys are like, well, that's normal, isn't it? Yeah. So they clean all the ducks and chickens and from everything from live to putting it in the freezer. So our girls are really good about that. This is our duck pond. This entire area that you see right here will be, by the end of the rainy season, this will be the first time that it'll be entirely filled up with water. And so that's going to be the place where we're going to have our tilapia for fishing and our ducks. We've got about 40 ducks that are laying eggs for producing duck meat, and we've got about 35 laying hens in the chicken realm, and we got 3 or 4 turkeys that we're reproducing turkeys too. So all trying to produce the meat on the property. It's good and healthy. And that's one of the things that we've seen in our, as we've bumped up what we produce on the property, we've seen our medical bills going down. The kids are less sick, and they're more healthy, and they're more healthy looking, and they get 3 great meals every day, and we don't grow rice, so, and they eat about 200 pounds of that a month. So the green tanks there off to the right are biogas tanks. And so this was a recent kind of experiment project that we took, and we hooked it up to the human waste from the girls' home, and now capture the human waste and mix it with the cow waste. And as the biodigesters start working, gives off methane, and we harvest the methane off of that, and it's piped straight into the house, and they're cooking their rice and they're cooking all their meals with it. So we've lowered their electricity consumption and their gas consumption. So one of the other things that I picked up on my in my jobs is that I'm overseeing all the short-term teams. So for 5 different countries, one of those being Kenya, and then Uganda and Tanzania, and then also Myanmar. And so any of the churches that support homes or teams that want to come from like Tequilma, they contact me, and I help work all the logistics for those things, and then I'm the liaison with the country directors who in a lot of those other countries are nationals. And so I put together an entire trip for those people and then work it with the national leaders. And so I went to Kenya in January of this year. It was my first time there. It was an amazing country and amazing people. So when teams come over, they always ask us, what are we going to do? You know, and I said, well, we always have a work project, try to do a work project. So this is one of those things. This entire framing structure behind this particular team was built by them in 6 days. And so what I try to do is I've designed these buildings so that really anybody of any kind of skill can go over and do it. All you need to know how to do is a chop saw, a wrench, and a tape measure, and a drill. And if you can use one of those, we can put you on one of these buildings. And so they're very simple but very functional buildings for us. Teams play a very instrumental part in not only doing projects, but we also get time with the children. And that's really why teams are there. They're actually augmenting the love that the parents, the staff that are there, because there's a lot of kids. I mean, you can imagine a family of 15 kids, and just like they're going to get, some kids are going to get missed. And so by teams coming in, they're augmenting with the love of Jesus. And you know, 80% of the kids that come into our home, well, 100% of the kids that come into our home, they don't know Jesus. But across, worldwide, across Remember New, 80% of the kids come to know Jesus and become fully followed devoters of Him. Devoted followers of Him. And that is that's significant. We have the opportunity to not only change the course of a life of a child, but introduce them to the Savior and grow them up. And we want them, in whatever culture they're growing up in, we want them to stay in their culture. We want to unleash them on their culture and become game changers, generation changers in their country. Last thought I want to leave with you is when I came and when we first went over there, I had the idea. I'm a driver. I just get in there and work hard, go. And my idea was build houses, find kids who need it, build more houses, find kids who need it. But I'm also a dad. And I started looking at all these children that we had, and I go like, whoa, we got to nurture these kids too. They need to grow. We need to provide things that they need to be able to grow up to be healthy adults. So it became much more of a, wow, this is a whole lot bigger than I ever even dreamed. And we really stepped into something, and we're going, man, we really have no idea what we're doing here. And but the Lord has blessed, and we are seeing kids just growing and changing. We had our first graduate from university last year, graduated with her accounting degree. She is now in accounting, working in a lighting contractor place. And so we're starting to begin to see how this whole process is working, and we just praise the Lord for it. So we did want to give you a few minutes, and there's no clock in here, Dan.
Dangerous.
So I wanted to give you an opportunity if you have any questions. So we wanted to make sure that we gave you plenty. I mean, there's a lot of things that we can talk about, but we wanted to make sure that if you had questions that we would be answering those specific questions. So, yes.
Yeah, would you comment on the root cause for this cultural indifference to children there?
I don't know that I can give a complete picture. The couple of things that we've seen, without being overly negative, I think part of it does come from the religion. There's in Buddhism, the friendships that I've had with people who have a deep who live it, like a neighbor of mine that I was friends with when I first got there, they believe that you're paying for your past. So whatever, that's the essence of karma. You're paying for your past sins. They actually call it sins. So whatever, if you were bad or terrible in your past life, then you will suffer in your present life as a way of repaying for that. So really it's the opposite. I mean, Jesus pays for our sin. They pay for their own sin in their own mind. That's what they're doing. So they have to put up with suffering and even accept it because of their past sins. So the way that that sometimes translates to is actually that if you are born very poor, that also is because you deserve it. You were bad in your previous life. And so there's not a real urgency in the heart of the normal people to reach in and pull somebody out of that place because they deserve it. That's my Western translation of it. But in getting close to people who are kind of living it, that's the way that I would see it. So some of it, like the Cambodia has phenomenally wealthy people. We've never seen so many Lexuses in our whole life. And there's a 100% tax on cars coming in. So whatever you pay for a Lexus here, just double that. And that's what they're paying in Cambodia. So we're talking $80,000 to $100,000. And then there's a Rolls Royce dealership in Cambodia, too, that manages to stay in business. We've never seen as many of those either. So the wealthy are vastly wealthy. They do not give to the poor ever. And so it's very, that's as much as I know.
There's one other thing that contributes to this is many of you know about the genocide that happened. And this is a surmising, you know, we don't, you know, this is not our sector of knowing everything about, you know, we can't fix the whole thing. So you just, but the genocide happened in 1975 to 79. And this is a different genocide than a lot of other genocides that have ever happened. Khmer, that's the name of the people group. The Khmer killed Khmer. It wasn't like they were separate tribes or anything like that. They killed the wealthy. Not the wealthy. Well, they did, but the educated. Anybody who had an education got killed. And so what happened was during that genocide, there was a people were turning on each other, mm-hmm. and reporting each other because everybody was so afraid of each other. Families were turning internally on each other, and so there was just a I think that there was something that happened in that genocide that just broke because there's a natural inclination to take care of stepchild or your nieces or nephews. There's just something about. And it could come from our Judeo-Christian roots, but something, we feel like the something broke, that even in the family setting, it's just so fragile. And so it's a surmise. We can't say for sure that that's a reason, but looking at the observation and understanding what we've learned about the culture, that's where that's another contributing factor to the disconnect.
And I think the poverty, you can't underestimate that. We don't have that kind of poverty here, and you know, as you've traveled in other parts of the world, that when you don't even have food to take care of yourself or your own children, you simply cannot even think about caring for anybody else's children. So, for instance, in America, if we had the foster care system, but you got no money to care for those children, how many people would be able to care for other people's children? So we don't want to be too hard on the culture, because given the same set of circumstances, I'm not sure that I would be that different either. So there's just factors about how we've been raised that allow us to trust more easily and allow us to give more easily as well of who we are. So I think it's multiple factors, and there's probably even more that I just haven't wrapped my mind around.
Another question. Yes.
Maybe I'm ignorant, but it seems the way you're speaking that Remember New is more of a global outreach. I thought it was only you and mm-mm. only in Cambodia. Can
no.
you explain that, please?
14 countries.
Okay.
We're in Laos, Southeast Asia. We're in Laos, Thailand, of course, Cambodia, and Myanmar, Burma. They're in the Philippines and India. Five countries in Africa, and three up in the Eastern Bloc countries, where they're beginning to implement another way of protecting children is through foster care through the church, and so Remember News is helping out with that. So there might be a few other countries and I can't. But yeah, so Remember New's been around for about 11, 12 years, something like that, and had explosive growth. They're presently sponsoring 1,800 children worldwide. So that kind of gives you a little bit of an idea. We have presently in Cambodia about 70 of those children. And Remember New did get their start in Cambodia, but it's been just difficult from the day one. You know, whenever you start something, you learn from all the mistakes from your startup, and that was what Cambodia was. And so since that time, the Lord's hit a reset button, and God is doing a great thing now in our country. So, any other questions or another question? Sure. Yes, Sherry Lou.
When you get a kid, you keep the kid. Or do you sometimes give the kid back to their parents? I mean, is it like the foster program, or do you keep that child until they leave?
Most of them, the majority of them don't have parents. Like, they don't have both of their parents. So one or two of them have either completely abandoned or died frequently. There's a lot of death in the country. So they'll have relatives. I think that's the... And if they do have a mother, sometimes if that situation, if she becomes employed and is able to stay in one place rather than traveling around selling food or something like that, then the kids do go back to them. It's not very common for a situation to change so significantly. They will go home to visit. They'll go, whatever relative they have that is kind of in a stable situation. About half of our kids can go home to somebody to visit on their, like a Christmas equivalent holiday to us. And then the other half don't have any kind of stable place, so they just stay with us all the time. Remember New is committed to taking care of a child all the way through university or all the way until they've reached as much education as they can. So if a child, there's certain tests that they have to pass in each country, and if they can pass that test and go on to university, Remember New will pay for that. If they can't, then we'll pay for vocational training so that they can have some kind of earning capacity.
So as long as they have a job, they're always insulated from the trade.
I thought it was started for the sex trafficking.
It is.
It sounds like a lot of other things coming in.
We're just being more general because our audience is a broader audience.
Yeah.
When's the rainy season?
June through November, 6 months. Cool season is December through February. Hot season is March, April, May. That's when you don't want to come.
It's always hot. It's just whether it's hot or hotter.
You get about 15 minutes outside working, and then you're going, I think I'm done.
Sir, do you find that you have any resentment with you being prosperous and being able to create jobs and things like that? Do you find that the local populace maybe thinks that you're stealing things from them?
No, I don't think so. If anything, there are many of them that are glad that we are there. They know that, some of the foreigners that come into the country, they're there for hurting children. But there's a number of them that are there that are starting organizations to try to help their country. And so we do experience a lot of appreciation from the locals, and we get appreciation for the jobs that we do provide. We have people working in our agricultural program, and so they are very grateful that they get to work. And some of those agricultural workers, we hire non-believers, and they're coming around. And they're experiencing the love of Jesus through our children and through our house parents. And love is something you just don't see very much of in that country. And so when you see somebody that knows how to love, it makes a drastic impression on those people. And they go, I want that. So did that answer your question?
Yeah.
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 The gospel is making a significant significant roads into the culture, and there's the church. We have a particular church that several of our staff attend, and we've kind of partnered with them. And when you go to their services, there is so many young, like they're in their 20s. The vast majority of the congregation is in their 20s, when the closer you get to know them, what you hear many times, actually, the young people come to know the Lord first, and they lead their parents to the Lord. And it's all through their attitudes and heart and love. Even our agricultural staff will say, we've never been in a place where we've had so much love. And so it's, you know how the darker it is, the more the light shines bright. That's what we see among the Cambodian believers. They're just beautiful. I mean, I can't imagine how much they delight the heart of the Father. They're just beautiful in contrast to some of the difficulties of the culture.
That church that we work with has planted 200 churches in Cambodia in the last 20 years. Most of those have come in the last 10. And so there is the gospel is penetrating at exponential rates right now. It is the fastest growing Christian population in Southeast Asia. Mm-hmm. And there is not an antagonism by the government towards Christianity right now. So it's gospel is alive and well. Mm-hmm. Another question, yes?
I just want to tell you how much I appreciate your transparency and your emails. You know, you just make me feel like you're sharing your heart, not glossing over to say, this is what we really need prayer for. You know, I really appreciate it. You know, it makes me feel closer to what's going on.
Thank you.
I like that.
Yeah.
And I want to say I'm astounded at what you've done in these years. Wow. Wonderful.
Well, he's good.
Yeah.
He's good.
It's helpful, actually,
but
for us.
Workers.
Yeah.
But it's helpful for us to look back because, you know, the things move really, really slowly in other countries. And so we always joke that whatever we'd want to do, it takes, like, without exaggeration, at least 3 to 5 times as long to get it done. And so we can go week after week and not see any progress on something. So when we were putting together the slideshow, we were like, wow, Lord, you really have done a lot. You know, it's just only when you can look back on it that you can see it. In the middle, it's a little harder to see.
Any other questions? Yes?
What kind of vocational skills do you try to teach the kids other than computers?
Computers and English are the two strongest ones. We've only started those probably about a year ago, so they're still kind of in their infancy. But besides that, there's things that we would love to have the kids learn, like things to do with their hands that just develop them as people, like Mark said, with the boys, some of the welding and the woodworking, those kinds of things. There's some sewing. The thing that is in that culture, the vast majority of women are hired by garment factories, and because the garment factories don't pay well, a lot of times, if a girl goes into the garment factories, then it's just a matter of time before she moves over into other forms of earning, and the very thing that we're seeking to not build bridges into that. So we do love for the girls to know how to sew, and if they had their own business, they could do it and be fine. But we don't like to encourage something that would end up in the factory. So
with vocational training, we really look for partners who are actually doing it in the country already, for Remember New to step in and also do that. They do it in other countries. But in Cambodia, we specifically look for other organizations that are already doing it. So we had a young man trained in air conditioning tech, you know, in taking care of air conditioning. He's not working in that right now, but he ended up getting a job because of some of the other skills that he was taught. But he got hired at a water park in Cambodia. So it's a good job for him. And so we really don't take a lot of responsibility, only building partnerships with those that are already doing it.
What we provide for the kids when they're growing up is just what we provide for our own kids, opportunities for them to get their hands into something, to see if they want it, if they like it. Frequently, there's just not a lot of career kind of options and development. So you ask a kid what they want to do, and they really have about 3 or 4 options in their minds that they can do. So by just exposing them to other things, it just allows them to think kind of outside of that box of what they know.
Mark?
Yes.
You've got how many homes working in Cambodia?
Five. You've got five. The sixth one opening in 2 months.
Are those in a general area, or are they kind of scattered in Cambodia?
So where the property is 30 miles south of Phnom Penh, and it takes about an hour and a half to get there. And then we have 2 in Phnom Penh, and then we go north of Phnom Penh, and that is where the Vietnamese floating village is. So that's kind of the spectrum right
now. And we have different, we can do different things with different settings depending on what space they have and kind of what the setting is.
It's hard to do gardening with the floating village, you know. so
or the rented facility in Phnom Penh. So
yeah, it's just a house, you know. And so some other questions?
Do you feed the
tilapia? Do I feed them? I love fish. It's one of my, I always tell Pilang, the house dad who normally feeds them, he says, when I'm here, I get to feed the fish. Oh, it's fish pellets. It's nothing. I just feed them fish pellets. So they eat other things too. We're trying to get them to eat bugs by putting lights over their tanks at night, you know, to attract the bugs there. So it's free food, you know, augments the stuff like that. So yeah. So last thing I would just like to mention is that we don't have a big display table or anything like that. We're pretty simple that way. But right there, back there by the pop-up sign off to the right, there's an information pamphlet. Where did that come from? An information pamphlet. Just about did it again. Okay. There's a folder back there. And it gives a little bit more information about the ministry and contact information for the ministry itself. But there's also a picture back there, and it's new and updated. And but also we would love for you to join our prayer team if you're not on our prayer team. I've got an iPad that all we need is a name and an email address. If you're not into email, just let me know. And my dad actually sends out all those updates by mail, so for us, because we really want to make sure that we can cover everybody that would want to pray and have updated things so that you would know how to pray specifically for the ministry. So grab a piece. You can either sign up with me today, hand me a business card and say, this is my email address. If you hand me a piece of paper that's got your email address on it and it's not written very clearly, that's not a guarantee that you're going to get it, because one letter off, you know, one letter off, and it just does not make it there. So if you would like to be on that, and you can also grab a picture, and on the back, there's a website link that you can follow. Type it into your web search engine and it'll come right up. You put your name and your email address in there, and that's another way. And then you'll have to confirm when an email gets sent to you that says, yes, I want to receive this. Otherwise, it'll get spammed out if you don't do that. Okay? So, any other questions? Cool. Thanks.
Okay, let me just give you a little bit of our map for the morning. Mark and Carrie, or maybe it's just Mark, I'm not sure, are going to be sharing with us this next hour also. Completely different. We are the privileged group that got to see the pictures and hear that way. They're going to share with us some real life stuff next hour if you want to stay with us. And then, because it's a shared meal Sunday, they're staying for that meal, and you can interact across the table or whatever. Let them take a bite now and then, but, you know, ask lots of good questions. So we love these guys. And
You're, some of you are probably saying Mark doesn't need to eat anymore.
Oh, man, nobody said that here. Yeah, Father, we want to bow again and thank you for this work. Lord, as these two went into that absolutely clueless, Lord, they're qualified because you had done it. They're in the right place because you said go. In the right time. Thank you, Lord, for the great work that is happening. And Father, we just want to commit them to you as they travel for the next number of months, just sharing some of their stories, some of life with other people, Lord God, that we that live in a much easier place can have a full picture and be fully behind all that's going on, humanly speaking. But God, it's your work, and thank you that we can be a team with them and partner with them in this way. Thank you, Lord God, for the lives spared from that ugly world. Thank you. In Jesus' name, amen.